Good morning, folks. July 2nd, as we approach the July 4th holiday, just another reminder, you know, when you're out on the road, be careful, be aware, understand that folks may be drinking, so you want to drive defensively for sure. I would love to get through this 4th of July weekend without any serious accidents, any serious illnesses. We'll keep our fingers crossed. Let's everyone contribute to that cause if we can. It's what's best for our community. Got a great show lined up for you today. We're going to talk to Debbie Bresler, Crescent City Countdown Club, celebrate America's birthday along the historic New Orleans riverfront with the free Go Forth on the River fireworks show. That's going to take place at 9 p.m. And she will join us to describe what's actually going to happen. There are other things that go on in and around that celebration as well, and we'll talk about that. At the top of the 12 o'clock hour, Bernie Pensinot, political analyst, will talk about this big, beautiful bill that passed the Senate on a vote of 51-50. It was a tie vote. Vice President, J.D. Vance had to come in and cast the tie-breaking vote, so it was 51-50 on that vote. It now heads to the House, the Rules Committee, this morning, and they're trying to pull things together to get a vote taken on this bill either today or tomorrow. Some bad weather through the Northeast Corridor and the East Corridor has got people tied up in airports. They're trying to get all the members back. They were not sure how fast the Senate would act on this bill, so they're trying to get the logistics together to make sure that they have all the members in the House chamber, that is, because the vote's going to be close. I think the vote was they passed it by two votes, maybe, before they sent it to the Senate. And a number of people believe that this vote may be even closer, if you can believe that. So trying to look at everyone's travel plan, see who's going to get in at what time before they start setting any definitive schedule about the casting of the vote on that bill. At 11 o'clock, we'll have President and CEO of GNO Inc., Michael Heck, joins us. We have a whole host of issues to talk about, and Harrison Crabtree joins us as well at 11:30. The director of the World Trade Center will be talking about a lit conference that was recently held, and we'll talk about what was discussed there. At 10:30, David Brindley, the deputy editor of the AARP Bulletin, and the AARP the magazine, they had an article about consumers having a stronger desire to try to looking to cut costs from groceries to gas. What's the best way to do that? David is going to share with us some tips there and give some advice on the best way to manage your day-to-day expenses. Things are getting a little tight. Folks are a little nervous, a lot of angst and anxiety out there. The economy's going strong. There's some strong prices out there as well. There are good ways to do things, not so good way to do things. And there are also a bunch of opportunities to take advantage of to cut your costs and to just be a little smarter and maybe think a little more about how you go about not only spending your money, but saving your money, right? So we'll visit with David Brindley there. We just talked about Sean Diddy Combs was found not guilty on the two of the biggest charges that were going to carry a potential life sentence for him, and his other charges that he was found guilty on were really about prostitution across state lines, called the Mann Act. And those, I think, are 10 to 15 year sentences on those particular cases. The judges ordered the state and defense to sum up their position as to whether or not there should be bond or bail for Mr. Combs and whether or not he should be released pending appeal. And I think those are due at 1 o'clock this afternoon. It is now 11:12. Eastern Standard Time, so in a couple of hours, those will be submitted. They'll be reviewed, and probably there'll be a decision made by the court late this afternoon. The court is closed tomorrow and Friday. We talked a lot about that because of jury deliberations. So that's kind of where that stands. And if we have any other breaking news, we'll certainly let you know what is going on and what is happening there. There was a really surprising release yesterday. I know there's been negotiations on this issue, and I'm really happy for women in women's sports that this outcome has finally been reached. It's in swimming. You know that I was a swimmer. I know very well, you know, the physical capabilities of males versus females when it comes to swimming and so forth, and felt very strongly about this. In fact, I actually, in conversations with political leaders many years ago, when this issue of transgender and gender identity issues coming up and men swimming in female categories, that this was it might appear in swimming first. And it may be the big issue in swimming first for a whole host of reasons. But it turns out, for the most part, between swimming and some track and field events, that's where it was. That's where it appeared first. And it got pretty dominant fast here. And it was always kind of curious to me why there was this hesitancy to step in by universities and others when you had a male who was swimming on the male college team the previous year, decided that that individual was going to identify with a different gender and go swim against women in the following year, and that they would allow this, that they thought that this was progress and good for female swimming. There was no way that they could compete. It was impossible. I mean, all you had to do was look at the first medal stand, as you saw Will Thomas standing there, you know, head and shoulders above every other female swimmer. So what has happened is that the University of Penn, as a result of a civil rights lawsuit that was filed against them by the Trump administration under Title IX, has agreed to strip all records held by Will Leah Thomas in swimming. The University of Penn will restore to female athletes all individual UPenn Division I swimming records, titles, or similar recognitions which were misappropriated by male athletes allowed to compete in female categories. University of Penn will also comply with Title IX. Go figure. You're supposed to be doing that all along. Meaning absolutely no males in all female sports. Complying with the law means the school will adopt, go figure, biology-based definitions for the words male and female pursuant to Title IX. So as it relates to UPenn, this notion of gender fluidity and gender identity, yesterday you're a male, today you're a female, is out. And they hope to set the record straight. They promise that they will send letters of apology to the disadvantaged female athletes, a number of whom were interviewed on mainstream media last evening, none of whom have received that. Still not completely, totally happy with the outcome, because in the release, they make reference to they were following the rules that applied at that present time, which is not true. The Title IX protections had never changed. The Biden administration tried to wordsmith around all of this, you know, but wasn't ever a threat to democracy. you know, we were just going to redefine the sexes, and that no big deal. And we'd step all over the rights of females. No big deal. You know, that had been done before, so why not go back and do it again? And it was all no big deal. I applaud the administration for taking this forward. I applaud Riley Gaines. I applaud a whole host of women that went to battle on this particular issue for the rights of females competing in collegiate sports. We now need to make sure that this carries through in the high schools throughout this country, in the grammar schools throughout this country, where you must be a biological female to compete in female athletic events, plain and simple. And that we don't get to change the rules. We don't get to sell these poppycock notions of what people that identify as a female can now menstruate and now can have babies, now can breastfeed, and now can do all of these other things, and just completely and totally confusing young kids, young adults. And the byproduct of this is that they would be allowed to compete against females. Having gone through puberty as a male, having the physical construct and structure as a male, the muscle development as a male, which we all know the science says is far superior to that as a female as it relates to strength, most importantly, size, right, which leads into a lot of other things and gives them an advantage. It's amazing how we can stare the obvious in the face on so many different issues and walk right around it, not even thinking about the tragedy that you're creating for the female athletes. And I've said this on this show many, many times, and I cannot square this up with folks. And I've not heard a legitimate answer yet about how do you look a collegiate athlete in the face who has been training and conditioning since they were 5 years old, competing against females only their entire life. And there's a flip of a switch based on the whim of another athlete that decides, I'm no longer have a desire to compete as a male, because last year I competed on the collegiate male team. I now want to compete on the collegiate female team, and that we allow that to happen. We allow that to trample all over the rights of the female athletes, and there's no empathy, sympathy, nothing for the female athlete who the rules have now changed, and for the most part, they can't compete at the highest levels and achieve the success that they had hoped to achieve, that they've had their eye on that their entire childhood life, and we took it away on one day. Absolutely amazing that all of a sudden, because of this notion of gender fluidity, without ever really going through any type of an attempt to physiologically or biologically manipulate your gender, we could just say the next day, I identify as a female, and I'm now going to compete against females. How did we ever get to a point in this country that we thought that that individual's rights to act on a whim would be more important and greater than the rights of female athletes? It's absolutely mind-boggling to me that we, you know, because government tends to move pretty slow. This went through this country at a meteoric speed. And there's still a lot, there's still a ways to go. And thankfully, there were some brave women that stood up for the rights of women who are going to be able to compete appropriately within their gender, their biological gender, which is how it's always been, and it's how it always should be. If they want to create another category, a trans category for athletic events, do it. I don't know of anybody that's really opposed to that. Create it. You can't legitimately say that you're not different than the others, because you are. But we have those that don't even want to make that admission. They don't want to talk about the advantages biologically or physiologically that they've been able to take advantage of, which means they're dishonest. And because we have some folks that are in our face and want us to make it feel guilty about this, you know, and try to make you seem like you are just a horrible individual for pointing these things out, people tend to go undercover. They don't want to be dealt. They don't want to deal with the fallout of this. They don't like the friction. They don't like, you know, the way that the course of the discussion. I mean, I'm not going to be intimidated by these people. The vast majority of these people are thinking emotionally. It may be something in their own life that's going on. It may be a happenstance with their own life that's going on. But that doesn't give you the right to trample on everybody else's rights. It's amazing when you think, going back to the early 1900s, that women were fighting for so many rights at that point in time, and that in a very relatively short period of time, this thing has come 360, and we now allow males to call themselves females and go compete against females. Would be a complete total annihilation and bastardization of the female gender, especially as it relates to sports. And we sat idly by, and a lot of people didn't say much, and were willing to let this happen. We should not have fear to step up and point out the obvious and point out what's right. Plain and simple. And I'll say it again. You want your own category? Go develop it. All for it. But don't go trampling on the rights of everybody else because you believe your gender to be something else and you're captured in the wrong body. But you being captured in the wrong body has given you physical traits far superior to those that you want to compete against, and that's just not fair. I mean, it's almost embarrassing, you know, when Will Leah Thomas stood up on the podium. I don't even know how you do that in good faith. I mean, this looked like Charles Atlas next to Minnie Mouse. It was crazy that we would think that this would even be a fair race. It was absolutely nuts. And for people to sit there and say, no, I think that this is fair, right? Average height of men is far greater than the average height of women, right? Average strength of men is far greater than the average strength of women, right? lung capacity. I mean, the list just goes on and on and on and on. I mean, it's just, there's nothing that is to the benefit of women over men as it relates in the competition arena. Nothing. And we would think that that would be fair. So what sits out there still unresolved is like Will Leah Thomas, you know, had set records while swimming at Harvard, while swimming at other Ivy League dual meets, and whether or not those schools are going to step up and do the right thing. Harvard, probably not. They have a tendency of not being able to do the right thing. They have opened a whole can of worms for them on so many different fronts. It's absolutely ridiculous. I don't see that happening. UPenn, thankfully somebody's stepping up. Maybe others will do the same thing. And maybe we can put this issue to rest. It'd be nice to put this issue to rest in 2025, right? I'd like to see it happen, wouldn't you? We'll be right back. Welcome back, folks. I don't know about you, but since I became of age, I get this magazine from the AARP. And every time I do, I sit down and I read through it, some incredibly interesting articles, always about lifestyle, culture, cost of items and things. Some really important information that I've actually incorporated in my life in so many different ways. Because they point out the obvious and from a slant that really makes a lot of sense to me. And more often than not, I didn't think about it in that context. And most recently, I opened my recent AARP bulletin up, and it had 99 great ways to save. And it started, you know, kind of perusing through, and I said, well, this makes sense. That makes sense. Let me get this guy on the show. So he's with us today, David Brindley, deputy editor of AARP Bulletin and the AARP, the magazine. David, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me. It's great to be here.
David, y'all do a great job in the presentation of a lot of different issues that are important to, dare I call myself a senior now, seniors. we appreciate same. Tell us about the motivation behind this, the 99 ways to save and where. And you guys have done this for a long time. I want to say for, what, almost two decades now, right?
Yeah, nearly two decades. So this is actually our 16th edition. And every year it's a crowd favorite. Our readers love it because who doesn't love to save a buck? That's what the motivation is behind us doing this every single year. And every year we have new and different tips.
No, absolutely. So let's talk about a few.
Sure. Yeah. So here's the surprising thing: an everyday expense that your listeners can help avoid. So that is, if you keep some appliances plugged in, even when they're not on, they're zapping electricity. So those are appliances like TV or a computer, because they have standby mode. So an easy way to save 10%, up to 10% on your electricity, is to just unplug those, or even better yet, put them into a power surge protector and turn the power surge protector off when you're not using it. Likewise, you can save a lot of money on energy costs in your hot water heater. So hot water heaters typically are set at 140 degrees. If you lower it to 120 degrees, you can save up to $400 a year. That's just an easy way to save money every single day.
And folks right away will say, especially with the TV, well, that's a pain in the neck. Well, you know, the reality is when I see that, I recognize, well, wait, let's see, I got four bedrooms. I'm now an empty nester. So three bedrooms, TVs are plugged in, smart TVs. You know, it's rare that someone is here. Every now and again it happens. It's easy. You can just go turn it on at that point in time and just leave the ones that you predominantly are using each and every day if you don't want to be inconvenienced, right?
Absolutely. That's a great way to look at it, definitely. And it's a simple way to save money.
So a lot of folks develop and y'all talk about this all the time, these everyday habits of doing things in a certain way or at a certain time and don't really reflect upon maybe there's other times of the day that it's better to do that. You gain a better benefit. And maybe, you know, that cup of coffee that you go into the coffee shop and getting that costs about, I don't know, could be as high as $7 now today. Who knows? Every time I go, it gets more and more expensive. There might be a different way of doing that, too.
Absolutely. Yeah, there, you know, a lot of these tips just rely on some flexibility in your lifestyle. So, for example, when you're planning a trip, if you can leave, say, a little bit earlier or a little bit later and not to travel during peak times, you'll often be able to save a lot of money on that plane reservation or a train ride. It's an easy way to save money. Flexibility. Likewise, if you're on a flight or if a flight is overbooked, you can volunteer to take a later flight, and your airline will likely give you a voucher of, say, up to $1,000 that you can use on a later tip, on a later trip. And you can also ask for free upgrades, like flying first class.
So when we're talking about habits, what are some examples that that are costing people money and they don't even really? I know you pointed out one about TVs, but are there others?
Sure. This is interesting. So studies have shown that people who pay with cash regularly tend to spend less money overall. That's probably because, you know, who wants to pull out your wallet and pluck down 20s, 20s, 20s? So you're more aware of how much you're spending if you use cash. Plus, if you use cash, a lot of the small businesses are passing on the credit card fees that they get from the major credit card issuers to the customers. So you can avoid those credit card fees by paying cash at those small businesses, or even, we see this every day, at gas stations.
Yeah. You know, we have a bad habit when we go grocery shopping. We always overshop. I'm convinced that we do it when we're hungry. Every time, it has to be. And then a week later, we find ourselves having to rid ourselves of, you know, a fairly substantial amount of food product, which is completely and totally wasteful. So what are some of the ways to cut grocery costs?
Well, you pointed out a good point. If you go to the grocery store when you're hungry, you're likely to have more impulse buys. So just have a snack before you go to the store, and, you know, maybe that'll stop you from grabbing those pretzels off the aisle. And while you're looking at those aisles, pay attention to not only what's at eye level, because that's where stores tend to put the priciest products. So look above and look below for deals that you may not be aware of. And one tip that I always do is I go to the self-checkout lane. That way I can avoid those last-minute impulse buys when you're standing around waiting for a cashier. And when you're scanning your items, if something is really expensive, you can say, I don't want that. You can put it away, and you can save money immediately.
Yeah. And, at one time, people believed that there was a huge difference between, like, brand name versus store name products.
Mm-hmm.
What advice do you have relative to that issue?
Well, there can be a difference, but sometimes it doesn't matter. Like if you're using, if you're making a tomato soup, for example, does it matter if it's, the brand name or the store bought? It's practically the same thing. So it just depends on what you need. So for example, some people like to buy Cheerios and not the off-brand. But if they want to have raisins, sometimes the store brand raisins are just as good as the national products.
And you find sometimes they're actually produced by the same people too, right? If you want to do a little bit of research.
Yeah, that can be the case. Yeah.
So credit cards, mortgages, any recommendations there? You know, you're in somewhat volatile interest rates, things of that nature.
Yeah, well, not so much in terms of interest rates, because maybe it's already locked in. But here's a really smart move in order to make your money work harder for you. So if you pay half your monthly mortgage every 2 weeks, you'll end up making one extra monthly payment each year. That cuts down interest and can help you pay off your loan faster. The same principle applies to credit cards. If you're carrying a balance, if you make two payments every month, that will also decrease the amount of interest that you owe at the end of each month.
And one observation is usually the minimum is the interest accrued for that previous month, right? The minimum payment. So if you only make minimum payments, you're really only covering interest.
Right. And that way it makes it really, really hard to get out of that credit card debt. So if you can pay more than the minimum, but even if the same amount of money, say you're paying $100, if you pay that twice a month, two $50 payments, you're still going to save some money on the interest.
Yeah. Yeah. You guys also recommend cash might be the best way to pay for meals when you go out. Obviously, more and more people are taking those credit card transaction fees and placing that on the consumer.
Right.
It's almost every restaurant you go to now. I mean, there's very few that don't do it any longer.
Exactly, yeah. So if you do pay with cash, you're not going to have to incur that extra fee. And, you know, going out for dinner is really expensive, so even 3% on $100 is $3 that you can save right off the top. Really simple savings that add up. These small savings add up to pretty substantial savings over the course of a year.
Now, you guys have done calculations that if you just, you know, and I don't remember exactly how y'all put it, but it was though if you adopted just, let's just say, half of these things, I think folks would be surprised as to how much money they would save monthly.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you adopt half, you could save tens of thousands of dollars a year. But like I said, not every tip is going to apply to everyone. So, you know, choose what makes sense for you and your family and your budget and apply those. And like I said, those small changes and savings can really add up over the course of a year.
David, y'all get feedback from your readers. What do most people tell you, after they read the 99 great ways to save, that they've implemented or they've, decided to do and they realize right away, wow, this was easy?
Yeah, this is actually our most popular issue of the Bulletin each year. Like I said, we've been doing this for 16 years, and it's a perennial reader favorite. And we get lots of feedback from them. One of my favorite things is when they say, oh, you had great tips, but here's another tip for your reader. So we'll put those into the issue, and then it becomes 101 tips, and it can go on forever.
And is that how a lot of this has been developed, is people writing in saying, I tried this, and this is what it yielded?
Sometimes, yeah, we'll take some of those tips, and if we don't publish them during the year, we'll publish them, the following year. But we've been working on this. We started working on this last December. We worked with three freelance writers, and they got in touch with experts, dozens of experts around the country, to provide, really great tips. I think we started with 160 tips, and we winnowed it down to the top 99. So it's a real labor of love, but our readers really appreciate it. It's a great way to help our readers, save money. A lot of our readers are on, limited income, and so this is just a great way that we can, as an organization, help our readers age better.
Absolutely, and if people want to see the 99 ways to save, they can go to aarp.org/99 ways to save. So
absolutely.
Check it out, folks. You'll find it very, very interesting. And sign up for that for the bulletin and the magazine. They're free, if my memory serves me correct, right?
They're free for members, yes.
Yeah. And AARP provides a lot of fabulous information all the time, and some discounts on always a little tidbit here, a tidbit there that can make a difference. David Brindley, thank you so much for joining us. Deputy editor of AARP Bulletin and AARP The Magazine. Have a great 4th of July weekend.
Thanks so much for having me. Take care.
Thank you. We'll be right back, folks. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us. So the big, beautiful bill's being debated on the House as we speak right now. Obviously, changes made by the Senate. Many House members are not happy about some of those changes. A lot of discussion, a lot of folks talking about Medicaid and Medicare and things of that nature, and what provisions are in the bill, what this ultimately means. Yesterday, I talked a little bit about this as to, you know, the increases in Medicaid spending. And it's really interesting how one issue drives other issues and cost. There was an article in a paper, a number of mainstream media papers the other day, about Massachusetts, their shelter program. In fiscal year 2025, they're going to spend over $1 billion. Their Emergency Housing Assistance Program provides taxpayer-funded services for education, legal assistance, health care, public benefits, enrollment to families in need. There are actually 4,000 families involved in this program, and about 1,600 of these are either migrants, refugees, or asylum seekers. State taxpayers are spending about $3,500 a week for each family, or $1,000 per person in the program a week. That's $52,000. That's above the median amount of income for people in most states, right? And they're providing this as assistance. Boston has the highest number of families in state-run shelters. Now, a lot of this health care costs that they talk about here, and that makes up the biggest part of this spend, is coming right out of Medicaid. Right out of Medicaid. So every time that we make a decision on the immigration side of the balance sheet, that we decide to let millions upon millions upon millions of people come into the country, and then we decide to allow them to get on Medicaid, for everyone that comes on Medicaid, increases the probability of you as a citizen to get less. So if you don't think that there's a direct correlation between decisions made by the previous administration and where we find ourselves today as it relates to the number that has been spent and a number that we cannot afford to continue to spend, you're kidding yourself. There is a direct economic impact and cost to you. This is just one city. $1 billion, and almost half of the recipients are here through some immigration process. It's why I've talked repeatedly about economic credentialing. We can't support the lower socioeconomic group population that we have in this country today. We don't need help from other countries to make that matter even worse. This is a classic example of it. And just repeat this in every major city, and you could add to it those that are sanctuaries. And if you want to make it come home, quantify that for everyone that comes in, and if you're a recipient of these benefits, you're less likely to get the same the following year because of these policies. We'll be right back. Folks, when we come back after the top of the hour news break, we will visit with Michael Heck, President and CEO of G&O Inc. We'll talk about some of the insurance bills that passed, Troop NOLA, the Plaza Tower, Walmart, and a whole bunch of other issues. And we have a special guest, Harrison Crabtree, the director of the World Trade Center New Orleans as well. So stay with us. We'll be right back with Michael Heck.